innovate. Kizzy's Friday Game Changers, taking your business to the next level.
Coming up on Kizzy's Friday Game Changers.
And I know this about myself. I'm probably the person who is more confident and comfortable with uncertainty than anybody else in my life or even that I do business with. So I will sometimes push people to do things that go into the shadows, and they say, well, I don't know what's in there. Why would I walk in there with you? And I say, you know what? I've been through this before. I've walked down this path, and it always turns out just fine. Trust me, we've got this. I'm confident in you as my friend walking this path with me. We can go in there, and we're going to come out successful.
And also,
if the purpose of your business is solely to make money, go that route. The purpose of my business is to create something personal inside of these other major corporations. And if I'm doing anything against that goal and purely, you know, seeking revenue, I'm defeating the purpose of why I'm starting the business in the first place.
Hi, this is Ray Zinn.
Hi, I'm Jamie Martin from Ideal Shopping Direct.
I'm Kate Bell, founder of Zip Us In.
Hi, my name is Eirik Eide Patterson. I'm a co-founder of Seaborg Technologies.
Hi, I'm Katie Farrell, transformation coach, founder of The Catalyst for Life.
Hey, everybody, I'm David Frangioni, CEO and co-founder of All Access IDA, Inspire and Develop Artists, and you're listening to Kizzy's Friday Game Changer. Check it out.
Hello, I'm Millie Vincent, and I'm going to be telling you a few tips about business. In business, it is vital to enjoy what you are doing. Take any setbacks positively, get up and move on. As an entrepreneur, spouse will tell you, you spend a lot of time working both in and on your new business, so it must be something you're enthusiastic about. But you can't expect to become a millionaire overnight. Time and energy is your investment. Entrepreneurs often fail because they believe they have that one great idea that will change the world and make their fortune instantly. When that doesn't happen, they give up and move on to their next idea. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to Kizzy's Friday Game Changers
with your host, Kizzy Nkwacha,
a show for innovators and motivators, people just like you.
Kizzy is the publisher of Business Game Changer magazine and the property investor, editor of the Successful Women in Business book series
and the best-selling Every Entrepreneur's Guide series.
Every week, Kizzy and his guests provide you with the tools you need to take your game-changing business to the next level.
Listen, learn, and innovate.
Now meet your host, your mentor, and your fellow game changer, Kizzy Nkwacha.
Hello and welcome to Kizzy's Friday Game Changers. This week I'm talking to Kevin Wenning, the brains behind the Employee Art Program. Now, if you're not familiar with the Employee Art Program, grab a pen and paper and listen to this. The Employee Art Program is a genius idea that brings people together through art. The program brings your staff together with each other and your company with people outside your walls. Told you, genius. In just a few minutes, I'll be talking to Kevin and uncovering his strategy for game-changing success. Take the phone off the hook, lock yourself in, and sit back because it's Friday. I am Kizzy, and this is Kizzy's Friday Game Changers.
Hey, Tanja Lee here, all the way from Melbourne, Australia. I'm a leadership and mindset specialist for real estate and property professionals, and my Friday wouldn't be complete without Kizzy's Friday Game Changers.
Hello and welcome to the show. Kevin, it's fantastic to have you join me.
Thank you very much for having me here today, Kizzy.
I've got to say that the first time I heard about the Employee Art Program, I stopped in my tracks, I slapped my forehead, and I said, brilliant. I think I emailed you right away after I read about the art program, and I said, Kevin, we've got to talk. Tell us how the art program works.
Well, if you've heard of employee arts programs before, there are some major corporations that run employee art programs, and I first heard about it through some companies that I do business with, and they ran a program called On My Own Time, which is a simple way of saying that they allow artists or people that work in the company who create any kind of visual arts to create something, and then they do a display for it where they hold a weekend sort of a gallery show for friends and family and public to come in and see their gallery shows. And that's where I first got familiar with the idea. And then through my consulting business where I work with big clients, I went into a lot of big offices where I saw just mostly blank office walls. Maybe they just moved into an office or maybe they moved to a new floor. A lot of times though, I'll go into businesses where the people have been on that floor for years and they just never decorated because the art, the visuals around the office are kind of the last thing that they think about when they set up an office. They want to get right to work and get to their business pressures. So they're not really thinking about how do people interact with this space. Now, I went into a couple of offices with clients where I walked down the hall and I saw photographs and paintings and things from the people in that office. And I inquired about, you know, who came up with this? Where did this come from? Because I've never seen anything like this. And they pointed me to a back corner of the office. They said, that gal over there, she's an artist. So she kind of organized this with other people in the building. So I went and talked to her and she said, yeah, I went out and I looked for, you know, companies that would help us organize this and do this for us to actually decorate the offices, not just put up a one weekend gallery show. And she said there just wasn't anything. So I organized it for our own office. So that's where the idea came from.
So after you got the initial idea and you began working on it and approaching other businesses, what was a typical reaction you had when you pitched this idea to, I don't know, managing directors and chief executives?
Well, there's two different reactions. The first is, yeah, that sounds fantastic. I love the idea. And then all of the, you know, the juices start flowing and they start coming up with, you know, different ideas as to why it wouldn't work, or, you know, different challenging questions, I guess, if you will. And the biggest one, especially for HR managers or any kind of executive, is how do we measure this? Because I like the sound of it, but if we're going to invest in doing something like this, you know, first of all, how do we enact it? How do we, you know, get it out to our people and get people participating in it? But then in a business context, everything has to be measurable and quantifiable. How do we, you know, adjust the bottom line and say that it made X amount of dollars or what have you for us? And that's a little bit of the trouble with, you know, an arts initiative in a company, and why, as it turns out, the businesses that I've talked to that have done this, why they do just a gallery show. It's entirely up to their employees. They hold it for one weekend. It doesn't cost them very much. And yeah, so I'm going off the deep end there on the explanation. But basically, the challenge was, in a business context, how do I quantify this?
And when you get this objection thrown at you, how do we measure this? How do we quantify it? Do you try to persuade them? Do you try to get them to see the benefits? Or do you say to yourself, well, if you have to ask me this question, you're probably not the right company for this sort of initiative?
That's a perfect question and very viable. So a little bit of both. If I'm not trying to persuade them, then that means that I don't believe in my business and I don't believe in what I'm pitching them. So I'm not a good salesman anyway. That's just not who I am. But yes, I like to make those personal arguments with people and then let them, you know, let those arguments fall where they will. I'm not going to talk somebody into something if they don't believe in it anyway. So first off, I am approaching companies who already have arts initiatives or who have programs within their company that kind of fall in the same categories. So The typical argument that I would give somebody is, you know, you as a company have a reimbursement for gym membership or for yoga class or for some sort of health initiative. How do you measure that? Do you know that your people are actually using that bonus or that cash that you give them to, you know, pay for their gym membership? And do you ask people to check in and show you that, you know, how much weight have I lost? What's my fat content? And do you that with your employees? Because if you ask them to paint an image or go out and take a photo just for their own therapy and say, I'm going to give you $100 to go practice your hobby, how would you quantify, you know, getting the value out of that? So it's in that same category of employee benefits programs where you do it for employee health and wellness and mental well-being as well, rather than saying this has to contribute X amount of dollars to our bottom line.
Well, I guess that takes us nicely to my next question. But before I ask it, I've got to say, you are preaching to the converted, because I remember the first time I heard about the art program, I did say to myself, what a brilliant idea. But just for the sake of argument, Kevin, what would you say are the benefits for a company to be involved in an art program?
Absolutely. That's the next step, right? First is overcoming that initial objection that, well, this doesn't fit with our company culture. And you're, what you said previously is absolutely right. if they initially right off the bat go, well, this doesn't fit for us. How, you know, I don't think this idea makes sense at all. Then yeah, they're probably not the right client, and I don't want to talk them into it, because then it's just going to be a constant battle getting them to actually participate and support the program, right? But if their eyes open, I see that light bulb moment, they go, yeah, that, tell me more. Let's talk about this. I have a whole presentation where I kind of walk them through different benefits. And the big one, especially that I've found with major corporate clients, is building informal networks within a company is very hard to do, because during the workday, everybody's busy with their own work, their own initiatives. And even when you have happy hour and everybody's sitting down for drinks and cocktails at the end of the week together, they're still sitting at a table with the people that they know from the office. Mm. They're not branching out and talking to, you know, accounting's not going and talking to engineering, talking to design. They're not intermingling. They're all just having a conversation amongst themselves. And art breaks down those barriers in ways that really other things just don't, because art is self-exploration. It's psychological exploration. And a big component of employee art program is not just gathering those artworks, printing them, and displaying them in the office. That's the tangible thing that you see on the wall at the office. The intangible is a community that I've created outside of the walls of work, outside of social networks, and it's a completely private thing where those folks that want to participate can come in and interact over their art, talk about their art. We even have, you know, online discussions where people show their art and we do critiques of it amongst ourselves, so just the people in the company that are participating, and then public as well. So if they want to put up their art and get it critiqued by a professional artist, I'm building a network of professional artists that are also part of the community. So it's not just me talking to your employees. It's all of these professional artists that are also invested in seeing everyday people practice their art and explore more creatively. I think I went off the deep end there for your question again.
No, I think you answered the question perfectly, Kevin. As you were speaking, it occurred to me that another thing you're doing is that you're creating a bridge between the company and the community outside of its walls.
That's not an active component of the program, I wouldn't say. Where that does come into play, yes, is if the company takes those pieces of art that have been created and then either creates a gallery show where they put it up in a public space for people to come and view. But for the most part, companies are creating their online personas and really getting out into social media. So all of those artworks that we've collected and chosen to display or even not display in the office, those are all part of a digital library that the HR and the marketing and the publicity arm of the company will have access to promote. So if they're doing an initiative on their social media, everybody that participates in the program signs a release, says, yes, my art may be used for promotion in the company. Not to the degree of the marketing arm of the company saying, oh, we love that picture, we're going to start using that and not pay the artist for it, because that would not be fair to the artists, but to the point that these artworks are all available to be used in a social media campaign. And I have a very good friend who has worked in recruiting and HR for some major companies. And when I first pitched this idea to her on my walk around phase of the idea, she immediately goes, yes, this is fantastic. Now we need to help you design a whole campaign around building this, you know, as a public facing portion of the program, so that the company can get the benefit out of, you know, running this employee art program. Now, I'm going to get a little long-winded here on this, but then so my initial reaction to that was, yes, I see the value for the company in that. It's much easier for them to say yes if we approach it as a public-facing program that gives the company benefit. It helps them recruit. It makes them look like an arts, you know, a proponent of the arts in their community. However, think of it this way. If you approach somebody and your first words out of your mouth are, I want you to do this because it's good for me. Mm. They're probably going to go, nah, thanks. It was going to be a good idea until you just wanted me to do it for you. So if it has to first, in the very first phases, even the first year of the program, it has to first benefit the employees, benefit their well-being, benefit those informal networks in the company, start getting people thinking creatively. And then once those employees have participated once or twice and seen the benefits for themselves, now if my manager comes to me, now the owner of the company comes to me and says, we want to make this a public-facing campaign. We're going to make a big gallery show at the end of the year for this. By all means, let's do it. I really want to participate now because I've seen the benefit for me personally. If my company benefits from it as well, yes, it's mutually beneficial. Now it's good for everybody.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? That when you talk about this employee art program, I can't help but wonder how this impacts the businesses that take part, because most businesses have a very professional, you know, very not cold, but aloof and very kind of objective persona. And then suddenly you're coming along and you're humanizing it and you're connecting the staff in such a way that they'd never even imagined connecting with each other. It must make the workplace a friendlier place to be.
I don't really have much to add to that. You summed that up very, very nicely. And obviously, as you said, you're already the converted, so you've already been thinking down those lines. And that's the point of view that I have to bring somebody around to if they're not, you know, wholly on board with the idea or just, you know, not quite sure about the benefits of it. So bringing people around to that realization that you just stated very clearly is my job when I'm getting it out there into the marketplace.
And what a great job to have. Now, I know that you're in the very early stages of the art program. We describe it as pre-revenue. So you're not making any money, or you're not making tons of money from it yet. But what are your goals for, say, the next 5 years?
Well, let me start a little narrower field of view there for the next year. I'm bringing on some beta companies. There's another better word to use for that, but I work a lot in software. So the word that makes sense to me is a beta program where I roll it out with some partner companies that are willing to work it out with me and help me work out some of the kinks in the program and understand where the value is to them and then help me to refine the program. Because when you first start something where you're affecting hundreds of employees in an organization, there are going to be some things that I just haven't thought about unless I've run the program before. So that's that year one, basically. And those companies that come on board are agreeing to do it at cost, meaning the cost of the artworks that we create and produce for them, rather than adding on my fees. In year two, after we've worked those things out, those partner companies will get a certain, you know, severe reduction on my fees if they want to continue the program. And then at that point, I'll be able to bring on bigger clients and other clients who have not done the program yet. And I'll have that track record behind me. And ideally, you know, as well, referrals and people for them to talk to who say, you know, these are the tangible benefits that we've seen in our company from doing it. So year one is a few different things. Within the first 5 years, obviously, I want to be revenue positive by year two on it. And then within 5 years, have it making up all of my income, plus probably at that point, I'll have a few contractors on board that are helping me with some components of the program, whether it's running the online community, doing some of the photo editing for me. I already have a fantastic print shop that I use that handles all of the framing and the actual art prints for me and the shipping. So I'm not doing all of that myself. I'm doing the preparation of the artworks and then handing it off to a professional shop that handles the fulfillment for us, if you will. So there's a lot of components to it. Ideally, as a business, I'm not building it to, take over any component of the market. I'm not building it to be a giant business. And the primary reason for that, there are a couple of companies out there that are competitors sort of in the space. And they started off small. And then they got to the point where they said, well, we just really need to go all about revenue. We want to be big companies. And in so doing, the quality of the artworks was greatly reduced. They're producing very low quality artworks. And all they're doing at this stage is printing basically poster art that they're putting in a cheap frame and putting in people's offices. Nothing wrong with that if that's all you want to do. However, my next step to the program, or what we're doing from day one actually, is all of the artworks that are produced to hang in the offices, the company, the employees enjoy them in their offices for 9 months to a year. And then after a year's time, the employees take those home. Those belong to the employees. They don't belong to the company. So those artworks can be hung in their homes. Those artworks can stay in their office. It's up to the employees. So I really want to produce high quality artworks and keep the organization and all of the overhead, built in such a way that we're focusing on creating those quality artworks and supporting and building that online community for those artists to connect with each other, as well as to connect with other professional artists that I'm building into the community.
Would you consider the idea of seeking venture capitalists for the program? Would you take on a VC?
I would not take on a venture capital type of firm in this situation. What would possibly make sense, I have a handful of angel investor type friends who understand the value of these type of endeavors in a big business, and I would take money from them if I found the need to expand quickly. And I know this is not speaking directly to your audience, because a lot of people get into business and entrepreneurship to find that profit point where they can make an exit, or they can hand off the business to other people to run their business. I'm building this business as something for myself and my family to run long term that will be profitable, and that we can have other people like-minded join in the business down the road. But I'm not building it to the point that I want it to be saleable, or I need to pay back my investors and have them see dividends out of it.
Okay, that makes sense. So I guess for you, this business is about producing something that you know that you and your family can run for many, many years, as opposed to pleasing your shareholders.
That's a very good way to put it. My motivation for it is in part what you just said. I would say that's about 20% of the motivation for it. The real motivation for it is I've been in these businesses, I've worked in these businesses, I've consulted in these businesses, and I find it a need that's very sorely lacking. And as we're having this conversation and having started and sold some other businesses myself and been a part of a lot of other businesses that have gone down the path to profitability, or I'm sorry, great revenue and great returns, and then IPO or selling themselves off to a bigger company, those certainly have their own benefits, but in the end, they don't serve their clients very well. They're serving the founders of the company, but they're not serving the purpose that they were designed. If the purpose of your business is solely to make money, go that route. The purpose of my business is to create something personal inside of these other major corporations. And if I'm doing anything against that goal and purely seeking revenue, I'm defeating the purpose of why I'm starting the business in the first place.
I've got to tell you that what you're talking about is something that we're hearing more and more about. 20 years ago, I think most of our listeners would be horrified at the blasphemy that you're not simply in this business to make as much money as possible. But in 2020, I think that's changing. People, I don't know, is it me? Am I getting older? Or is it now becoming more just as important to work for a higher purpose other than just to make tons of money?
Yes, it is. And as I interact with younger and younger workforces in these big companies that I work with, that is their motivation. They come in the door for a year or two, and then they want to get those skills under their belt. They want to understand the lay of this corporate landscape. What roles do I need to fill if I really want to move up in this company? And some choose that corporate path still that we've seen for the last 30 years in these corporations, where they can move up to the top positions and they can fatten their paycheck. And then another 50-60% of those young workers in the workforce are saying, where's the purpose in this? What's the benefit, not just to myself, but to the world at large, to the community at large? And if I can pay my bills and be a happy citizen, my family's happy, I have enough, then why should I be focused solely on profits and fattening my bank account if I can put benefits into that other half of my life where I know that I'm doing some good for myself and for other people?
That does make perfect sense, Kevin. I think we can all relate to that. But hold that thought. We're just going to take a quick music break and come back to our conversation in a few minutes. I've got a note here that's just been thrust under my nose to remind me that the UK newspaper is giving away 5 copies of Rainer Zeitelman's new book, Dare to Be Different. Now, this book is described as, what's it say? It's described as a fascinating explanation of the positive effects of goal setting on enabling people to become extremely wealthy. Bottom line, this book will help you make money. It's groundbreaking and it will change your ideas about business and success.
Now, to win a copy of Dare to Be Different, you just have to find the UK newspaper on Twitter. Its handle is UK Newspaper. And tweet them a message answering this simple question. How does your company, product, system or service stand out from the crowd? Find the UK newspaper on Twitter and tweet them your answer. We're giving away 5 copies of Dare to Be Different and the competition ends March the 1st, 2020. Good luck. Moving on to this week's Boss Star, our musical interlude. This week's Boss Star is Priscilla Silcock, or better known as her performer name, Safira. Safira is a heart-centered Australian burlesque author. Now, that's a phrase that I haven't said once this year, so I'm going to say it again. Safira is a heart-centered Australian burlesque author, entrepreneur, singer, songwriter, and teacher who believes in positivity. So should we all. Safira is the founder of Safira's Showgirls, an academy that empowers women through self-expression, and she's also the driving force behind the Ibiza Burlesque Festival. Now, I haven't been to Ibiza for a couple of years, and I think I've just found a really good reason for dropping in. In her spare time, Safira is also an incredibly talented musician. Here she is performing a track I heard last week. I've got to say, I just can't get it out of my head. It's called Mind Talk. Have a listen.
Hi, I'm Jonathan from Amplify, and I love listening to Kizzy's Game Changers.
Hi, this is Rob Basso, CEO of Associated Human Capital Management, and you're listening to Kizzy's Friday Game Changers.
The world famous Game Changers Show. Game Changers Show. Game Changers Show.
Welcome back. Before the break, you'll listen to Mind Talk by Safira, and I'm in the studio talking to game-changing entrepreneur Kevin Wenning, the brains behind the Employee Art Program and the Visual Literacy Project.
Kevin, just tell us, roughly, what is the Visual Literacy Project and how does that impact or relate to the Employee Art Program?
Sure. I'm glad you asked about that. So Visual Literacy Project is a component of Employee Art Program. It is a series of conversations where I talk to other professional artists and get their feedback, their insight into the type of art that they create. Now, if you get into any kind of professional art or photography and do that for a living, you're going to hear over and over again, you have to develop a distinctive style. You have to only work in one genre or one style so people know that, you know, this is what I'm going to get when I hire you as an artist. And there's absolute validity to that if you are only doing your art for profit. But for the rest of us who do our art for our own soul, our own satisfaction, for our own personal exploration of who we are and what we love about the world, we do it to explore. And I see all the time visual ideas and visual styles that I go, what? That speaks to me. I don't know why, but I love it. Or sometimes I'll see an idea that I just doesn't resonate with me. I don't get it. I see a picture, I see a painting, I just go, why did the person paint this? But I can tell that they did that with great skill and great craft, and they have a great appreciation and love for the type of art that they create. So I want to reach out to that artist and say, tell me more, tell me about your style. So reaching out to those kind of artists is my way of building a library of explanations to help other people understand different types of visuals, different types of art. So when you do look at a piece of art that you just don't connect with, but you want to understand why the artist created that, that's what we have that conversation for. So Visual Literacy Project is a series of interviews and a whole website where I've got those interviews hosted, where we talk about the art with those artists. And the whole reason that I started doing that was, at the most base reason, my own curiosity. So one artist to another, I want to pick your brain and understand your art, but then getting those artists involved in the Employee Art Program community to lend value to the other people that are coming into the community. So the other big black hole that I found within employee arts programs that exist today is they only take advantage of the people in the company will participate who are already some sort of a professional artist, or they already are confident in their art that, yes, if I put this on the wall, my other, you know, colleagues that I work with are going to walk past that and go, oh, that's beautiful, I love that. But there are another 20-30% of employees at that company who have some seed of artistic, you know, endeavor or appreciation in them, but maybe they abandoned it years ago and they just, you know, they put down their camera, they put down their brush, they haven't worked on their art in years. But if we give them a safe space to talk to other artists, draw that out of them, help them practice their craft again, and I'm not talking in a big way, I'm talking an hour or two over a 6 or 8 week period where they can have those conversations and just feel like, you know, I can go ahead and submit this to this program. I can go ahead and get this out there. And then these other professional artists are going to help me polish it to the point that I would be okay with putting it up on the wall in my office. So the whole underground idea behind Visual Literacy Project is get those ideas from the professional artists, share them with the amateur artists or the people who aren't quite sure of themselves, and bring them back, bring their skill set back up to the point where they would be confident participating with the employee art program.
So really, it doesn't matter whether we're talking about the employee art program or the visual literacy project, because really what we're talking about is demystifying art and humanizing it and making it accessible.
See, I could have said that all in just 10 seconds, just like you did.
You know, I think you should hire me as your publicist. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I tend to get long-winded. I get carried away with things when I'm excited.
No. That's because you're passionate and I'm just a spin doctor. I think that's the bottom line. Now, Kevin, we're at my favorite part of the show. This is a section we call past, present, and future. What it means is that I'm going to ask you three questions about your business past, your business present, and your business future. Now, these questions have been cunningly devised by an absolute genius in human psychology. Actually, I made them up, but if we get the questions right, the answers will give us a unique insight into the mind of game changer Kevin Wenning. Will you submit to the program?
I suppose. You're a good PR man. What could go wrong?
Now you sound really nervous. What can go wrong indeed?
This is actually one of the segments in your show that I really enjoy it as well. sometimes I'll skip to the end and listen to this part first and then jump back and hear the rest of the conversation.
Well, I've got a feeling, Kevin, that you're going to make a fantastic contribution to the past, present and future section of this show. Now, you've got to imagine that you can hear the sound of a clock ticking in the background. That's the sound of time passing by second after second. Can you hear it? Great. Here we go. Now, imagine yourself traveling back in time to meet the young Kevin Wenning just starting out on his entrepreneurial journey. Now, Kevin, he's bright-eyed, he's bushy-tailed, he's full of energy, and he's full of lots of questions. Kevin asks you to tell him one thing he must make sure he does and one thing he must make sure he doesn't do. What would you tell him?
Boy, I should have written these down beforehand because I had good answers until you just asked me this on the spot.
Okay, well, over to you.
So the one thing that I think probably never do, and I believe this no matter what you're doing in life, not just business, but never over leverage yourself. If you get to the point, there's a sweet spot in business and in life where you reach a little bit further than you think you should, and that's where you want to be. If you get to the point where you've over-leveraged yourself, meaning your time or your finances, your emotional capability, your family responsibilities, and you just are spread too thin, you're running at 150% of effort all the time, you're going to fail because that's just not sustainable. So find a point where you're stretching yourself every day to achieve a little bit of something new and to the point that you're a little bit uncomfortable, but not to the point that you wake up in the morning, you say, I've taken on too much. I'm going to have to drop some of these responsibilities. I can't handle it. I'm going to let people down, because that's never a good place to be. But it's always a good place to set yourself up where you have a little bit of a stretch goal every day or for this week or this month, and it feels like it's uncomfortable water. So set stretch goals, but not overburden yourself, I guess.
Do you know when you've over leveraged yourself? Do you know when those warning signs are calling for your attention? Or do you rely on the people around you to say to you, hey, you know, you need to slow down here?
A little bit of both. And I think we all have that internal voice that will tell us, and we usually tell it to go away, be quiet. I'm working here. I'm focused. And that's fine occasionally. Sometimes you have to push through and do things that that are a little bit uncomfortable. But if at the same time those relationships, those friendships, those other people in your life start to disappear, if your personal commitments, let's say you have a workout commitment, I'm going to get in 5 hours of workout this week and ride my bike or exercise or what have you, and that slips down to 2 hours and then it slips to zero. Okay, now you know that you're letting other important things in your life slip. So people will let you know, and then it's just a bit of self-awareness as well. Like I said at the beginning, you know, kind of look yourself in the mirror and say, what am I actually going to do today? Is that guy in the mirror the person that I actually want to be becoming, or has that person in the mirror become somebody that I never wanted to be? And just being honest with yourself about where you're spending your time and whether you're meeting your goals or not.
Are you an all-in personality? Do you throw yourself 150% into something, or do you prefer to dip your toes in and just gauge whether the water's the temperature you want it to be?
I like that question. And I'm going to use a recency bias that's in my mind right now because I'm reading a book called Originals by Adam Grant. And he addresses this in there about specifically people who start businesses. And the prejudice is people who start businesses who are successful are the people who give up everything else in their lives, leverage themselves, and just jump all in and go 150%. And the research says that's not true. The research says the people who are successful are the ones who are risk takers, who understand how much risk they can take on and understand how long this idea is actually going to take until it gets to fruition and gets to a market point where now I can shift over from everything I was doing before and drop that part of my life and make this new thing part of my life 100%. So I'm the careful risk taker. I'm the one that says, this is how much risk I can take on in my life right now. I'm going to go all in on that and then dial it up 10 to 20% past that. That's my reaching a little bit, going a little bit past where I'm comfortable, but not the 150%, 100% all in right now, because I can't just drop everything else in my life. I've got a family, I've got some young kids, I've got other things that I need to do with my time, I've got other obligations that I'm already committed to. And if I were just to drop those and go all in on the business, well, then I'm not being a very good husband or father.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. Tell me, how would you describe your relationship with uncertainty? Are you comfortable with uncertainty? Are you comfortable not knowing how things are going to work out?
For myself, definitely. And I know this about myself, I'm probably the person who is more confident and comfortable with uncertainty than anybody else in my life or even that I do business with. So I will sometimes push people to do things that go into the shadows, and they say, well, I don't know what's in there. Why would I walk in there with you? And I say, you know what? I've been through this before. I've walked down this path and it always turns out just fine. Trust me, we've got this. I'm confident in you as my friend walking this path with me. We can go in there and we're going to come out successful. I always have that mentality, but sometimes bringing other people around to that, to walk that path with me, business partners, my wife, friends, it takes a little bit of convincing. And sometimes I have to say, you know what? I'm going to go in there myself. I'm going to walk in there and show you this is going to work out. So I'm always confident and comfortable with that.
That's very philosophical, Kevin. I mean, you remind me of Plato's theory of the cave. That's Plato, the philosopher, not the dog. That's Pluto. Anyway, according to Plato, we're all living inside a cave and we're chained to the wall and we've got a fire behind us, which is casting a shadow on the wall in front of us. Now, as a philosopher and as a game changer, you climb out of the cave and you see sunlight for the very first time and you realize that everything that you thought was real, all of the fears, all of the anxieties that you had in the cave were just mirages. They were just illusions. And as a game changer, I guess you climb back into the cave and you try to persuade people that their fears are just illusions and that we can make the impossible reality if we just believe it.
I like that analogy. In fact, let me put a little more concrete example from my own life to it. I've done a lot of travel, and that's how I got into photography and really travel photography. And then I turned my photography into art and went down a different path with my photography. But when I first started traveling, I went out on my own and I talked to friends. I said, I'm going to China and Vietnam, and then I'm going to go to Indonesia. And there are a ton of kids that do this now and don't think anything of it. But it's still a scary spot to go. So you think about, I'm going to go to a foreign country where I can't speak the language. I don't have the knowledge about their culture. There are a lot of situations I'm going to have to navigate that I've never done before. And when you first land in that new country, you're very apprehensive. You're very, very much keeping to yourself. You're not reaching out and searching out new things. You're not eating new foods. You're not talking to new people because you just are unsure of yourself. And then the longer you're in that foreign situation, you start to grasp, this is how I interact with these people. This is how I talk to these people. I've learned a few words in their language. I know I can eat these foods. I've got a few things that I start to get comfortable with. And that was years and years ago when I first took that international trip by myself, and I felt really anxious and apprehensive about everything. Now I can get off a plane in a foreign country, and I don't feel that at all. It's just disappeared because I know whatever situations come up, I can handle them. Similar thing in our professional lives, and this has happened to me, where the last job I took, I was way in over my head. And the first 3 months, every day I was talking to professionals, I was at my computer watching videos, reading books, absorbing everything I could about my new business, because I realized this is like my travel scenario. I'm in uncharted waters, I don't know the culture, the language, how things work here, and I was in over my head. And over those 3 months at the start of that job, I got familiar with the lay of the land. I understood where my skills could really be applied to that job. And in everything that we do in our life, once we overcome those initial fears and we realize, I've got this, my skills match the situation, I can handle these things, and then also building a support network of people where, you know what, I don't understand this part of my business or this part of whatever I'm getting myself into, I've got to rely on somebody else for this. So it's just a matter of, you stretch yourself, then you get familiar with that and you become comfortable in it. And then you stretch yourself a little bit further. And then those just become a part of you. They're no longer unfamiliar situations. They're no longer scary situations. It's something that you've conquered. And the more of those things you invite into your life, the faster you grow, the more that you can take on yourself and handle, and you feel confident in handling.
Sorry, don't mind me. I'm taking some notes down here as you're talking. I've written down, my mate Kevin says, stretch yourself every day just a little bit more. And you know what? I'm going to add a sub note. I'm going to add a little footnote here saying, when you go through it, you can grow through it. How does that sound?
I love that. You're a good PR man.
No, I suspect that you're bringing out the spin doctor in me, Kevin. Let's move into the present. Let's move into the present. What motivates you? When you're fed up and you're thinking to yourself, boy, I'd rather be working with Kizzy and doing voiceovers on the radio. What keeps you motivated and focused?
I thought we were going to go open a bar in Honolulu.
That's later.
Gotcha. After we've done the hard work. Okay. Yeah. So when I was younger and I didn't have all the responsibilities in my life, I did a lot of theater and I really enjoyed being on stage. You know, getting out there, and then after the show, you go out in the lobby, and everybody's like, "Yeah, you were fantastic. We love that show. That scene that you did, I can't believe the way that all came off." And I'm thinking, you know what? There were months and months of rehearsal that went into making that show happen before you came and sat here for 2 hours and watched us put on that show. I'm thrilled that you enjoyed what we did in those last 2 hours, but there was 10 weeks of work that went into failures and running these lines and blocking it and getting everything, all of the dance moves and the songs and getting everything just perfect so that when we go out on stage, yes, it does look like a polished production. And the longer I was in theater, I realized I almost like the rehearsal portion of things more than getting up on stage, because that's where I'm failing and I'm trying new things and I get to explore and I get to practice. And that's where the art comes in. That's where I discover, what is this character going to be? What's the show going to be? So I never focus on the end result. I always find a way to take joy from those situations where, you know what, today sucked. I didn't get anything out of today. I failed. I nothing worked. All of my business contacts failed. I couldn't put together a photo to save my life. This was just a bad day. But that's part of the process. I know tomorrow I'm going to wake up and I'm going to reflect on today and go, you know what, that didn't work, but now I have an idea to correct that and go in another direction. And then when I get up in front of a company and I present to them, here are all of the artworks that your people have created that you guys get to enjoy in your offices, that's getting up on stage at the end of the show. That's the matinee where everybody claps and applauds and says, whoa, that's a beautiful job. But where I get my joy is in the process leading up to creating that spectacle, if you will.
As you're talking, Kevin, I'm nodding my head and I'm thinking to myself, I understand that 100%. And I'm pretty sure that our listeners do too, because as a game-changing entrepreneur, I get the feeling that it's not really what you get as a result of your endeavors, but it's the person you become along that journey.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. And that's part of the earlier question about, are you comfortable with uncertainty? You have to be. Because you know that you wouldn't be the person you are now if you didn't jump into those uncertain situations and become somebody new by overcoming that uncertainty. So you have to embrace moving forward with the same mindset.
I hear you, Kevin. I hear you indeed. Okay, let's step forward into the future. Let's go 100 years from now. Tell me, Kevin, how would you like to be remembered?
So the seed of this program, I guess, started with Visual Literacy Project. Before I even came across the idea for employee art program. And when you're getting into your art, specifically, painting or photography, you go back and you research the masters. And then you realize there are so many things from those people who lived hundreds of years ago that haven't been relayed to people who live today. And how are those ideas going to get passed down? Well, they're written down in books. We can look at their artworks, but how do we understand that art? How do we break it down? And how do we pass those skills forward to other people? And there's an awful, terrible movie called Idiocracy, which I think you're kind of a movie buff. You've probably heard of that one.
I've heard of it, yeah. Can't remember it, though. What happened?
Well, the gist is a guy wakes up way in the future and realizes that the smartest people in the future are just incredibly stupid because they passed down all of the wrong knowledge. Nobody passed down manners. Nobody passed down culture. Nobody in the future understands the values that helped us build a valuable culture and a valuable society. And I'm kind of getting off on a tangent here, but I believe that, we're kind of living in a golden age where we see all of the history and we have the knowledge from people in the past. How did we get to where we are as a society, as a cultural society? And then where are we going next? And if we don't hold on to those things and find a way to practice them, pass them down, we're going to lose them. Everybody has a cell phone in their hand, in their pocket. They can snap a photo right now. But what does that mean? How do I understand why is this a quality photo or not? How do I take that past snapshot to art? And then I really just want to get people curious about taking what they see around them every day, taking the visuals around them every day and elevating them and understanding the connection to historical art and techniques and practices. And so often, you know, when we get into our adult lives, it's just obligations. We don't have time to practice and do even small things on a regular basis to keep ourselves interested, keep ourselves motivated in a creative way. And I say this on some of my marketing materials too. I feel like specifically creative practices are like a body of water. They have to keep moving. They have to keep flowing in order to stay fresh, in order for life to live in them. If water flows in somewhere and it just gets blocked and it doesn't flow out, it just becomes stagnant. It stinks. Everything in that water dies. But if that water keeps flowing, then new things come alive. New things live in there. So creativity is the same way. You can't block it. You have to have an outlet for it. So that's what employee art program is for. Visual literacy project. Keep those ideas flowing to people. Pass down that knowledge. Help people understand why this art matters and what are the skills that they might need to practice it. And then employee art program is a way of keeping it flowing. So if you just create that art and you never get to display it or share it, that dies. That creativity within you dies. But if you have a way to display it, share it, get to have conversations about it, then that creativity keeps flowing and that part of yourself gets to stay alive and flourish.
Holy smoke. What a remarkably vivid image you create with just your words, Kevin. Amazing. Look, I've got the feeling this is a sort of conversation that could go on for hours and hours. I've got so much I want to ask you. Why don't we do this? Why don't we make a commitment to get together again in a few months' time so we can continue our conversation about how art and business can work together. What do you reckon?
I would love that. Sure. Let's keep in touch.
Absolutely. Kevin, over the course of our conversation, I've learned so much about art and how we all have something artistic to contribute and the effect it has on our work environment. So thank you so much for your insight and your wisdom.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to talk with you today.
Well, Kevin's incredibly inspiring story is a great reminder that thinking outside of the box isn't necessary when there are no boxes in your imagination. And game changers like Kevin, who take the road less traveled, earn the rewards most miss. Listen, learn, and innovate. Playing us out is Safira, and this track's called Facing My Demons. See you next week.
Hi, this is Ray Zinn.
Hi, I'm Jamie Martin from Ideal Shopping Direct.
I'm Kate Bell, founder of Zip Us In.
Hi, my name is Eirik Eide-Patterson. I'm a co-founder of Seaborg Technologies.
Hi, I'm Katie Farrell, transformation coach, founder of The Catalyst for Life.
Hey, everybody, I'm David Frangioni, CEO and co-founder of All Access IDA, Inspire and Develop Artists, and you're listening to Kizzy's Friday Game Changer. Check it out. We'll be right back.
Get in touch with Kizzy's Friday Game Changers by emailing fridaygamechangers@email.com and follow us on Twitter by searching for Kizzy's Friday Game Changers.